Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Sports Urban Legend, along with my co-host Macaulay Matthew. I'm of course William Ramo. What's up, Mac? How you doing?
Hey, what's up, man? How's it going?
Not much, man. Good to have you on the show as always.
Hey, good to be on as usual.
And ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for tuning in with us and checking out this episode of Sports Urban Legend. On today's show, we're going to be talking about what went down at WrestleMania. WrestleMania 38, our thoughts about the Oscars that went, the Oscar event and, everything that went down on that. We're also going to talk to you about the Batman movie review. We're going to give you our thoughts on that. Talk about the baseball season, so far for the Mets and the Yankees. And, what else? And much, much more. So if you guys want to talk about any of these topics and more, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 563-999-3529. That's 563-999-3529. So feel free to talk about any of these topics or more. We'd love to hear from you. But with that said, let's give you our thoughts on the WrestleMania. Mac, what's your thoughts on this year's WrestleMania that went down?
It was one of the better ones that we've seen in a while, I think. Both nights were very entertaining. There were some surprising matches. Not that many disappointing matches, to be honest with you. But one of my favorite matches was RK-Bro versus the Street Profits versus the Alpha Academy. That was the best match of the weekend, I think. I mean, so many high-flying moves, many acrobatic moves, and that match was like very entertaining, very fun to watch. Also, I thought the women's match, which I failed to mention on my show, I thought that match was also very good as well.
Which one, the Bianca Belair versus Becky Lynch?
The Sasha Banks, Naomi.
Oh, yeah, Naomi.
Against Liv Morgan and what's that lesbo's name? The big one. The WME player.
Rhea Ripley.
Rhea Ripley.
Rhea Ripley. Versus Carmella and Queen Zelina.
Right. I thought that match was good. I thought the jackass, Johnny Knoxville against Sami Zayn, I thought that was funny as hell.
Yeah, that was a very interesting match right there.
Seeing Wee Man body slam Sami Zayn and seeing all the jackass props, help out Johnny Knoxville. I thought that was funny. Even though it was a short match, it was very funny to watch.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The disappointing match of the night, of the weekend, I should say, was probably that Corbin against...
Oh, yeah. Drew McIntyre match.
Drew McIntyre, yeah. Definitely disappointing.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Let's dive into it. The Usos defeat Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs. Rick Boogs suffered an injury during that match, and the Usos, hit the 1D, the one and done, which is, basically their homage of the Dudley Boys 3D finishing move for the victory. Drew McIntyre versus, he defeated Happy Corbin, which was arguably the worst match of the pay-per-view event, like you mentioned. The only memorable thing that happened in that match was Drew McIntyre using his sword Angela to cut the ropes at the end of the match. I wish he would have did it before that match started, but, you know, it is what it is.
I haven't seen a sword that powerful since the Sword of Omens in Thundercats.
Yeah, right, that's true. Very true. But, yeah, then you had The Miz and Logan Paul, who, you know, who wrestled pretty well. They defeated Rey Mysterio and Dominic Mysterio, Rey's, you know, real life son, obviously. And
you mean Eddie Guerrero's son?
Well, yeah, I guess depending on the storylines. what was I gonna say? Yeah, so the Miz and Logan Paul won, which was shocking. But then even more shocking, Miz turned on Logan Paul. The skull crushing finale on Logan. After they won the match,
I don't know what was up with that. Like, why did Miz do that?
Well, from what I've read, apparently there's rumors that Logan Paul wanted to be a babyface, so I guess he felt this would have been the best way for him to turn into a babyface.
Babyface with who? The YouTube audience?
Yeah, I don't see him being a legit babyface, but, you know, who knows? They're gonna have some work cut out for him, you know, to do that. Then you have, to me, one of the best matches of the night. You have Bianca Belair defeating Becky Lynch to win, you know, the WWE Raw Women's Championship. You know, these are the two women in recent history to win, you know, main event matches at, you know, WrestleMania, their respective WrestleManias. Last year, Bianca Belair defeated Sasha Banks to win the title. And then, of course, I think the year before that, Becky Lynch defeated Charlotte Flair and Ronda Rousey to unify the Raw and the SmackDown Women titles. And then, you know, that was
a good match also, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
Bianca, and congrats to Bianca for regaining mm-hmm. the title. And I made the joke that, you know, she could have actually lent Jada Pinkett Smith her ponytail. Chris Rock would have made that joke.
Well, I guess we won't get into that in a few minutes. You know, that crazy situation. We're going to dive into that, too.
Bianca does whip her hair back, like Willow Smith's song.
Right, yeah, that is true. There goes that correlation right there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the first, I guess I can't say it's a surprise because the rumor was that Cody Rhodes was going to come back and it would have most likely been against Seth Rollins. And sure enough, you know, Cody Rhodes made his return. I'd say that probably the most surprising thing about that match was, you know, he retained his AEW theme song, coming over to you know, back to WWE after a 6-year hiatus, you know, when he ran and wrestled in AEW. Cody Rhodes won that match. And then the following, what was it? On Raw, you know, he cut a very inspiring promo about, you know, he wants to win the title, the same title that eluded him and his father throughout their careers. WWE, you know, hopefully WWE won't mess it up like they did with Elias's gimmick when they turned him to Ezekiel, Elias's brother Ezekiel. That I don't know what that's about, but that's WWE logic for you right there. And then, just speaking of WWE logic, you had Charlotte Flair defeat Ronda Rousey to retain the WWE SmackDown Women's title. I mean, to me, makes no sense. Charlotte Flair did not need this victory. Charlotte Flair is a 13-time champion, and she's only been in this company for, like, what, 5 years or so? 4 or 5 years, and she's already a 13-time world champion. Like, Ronda Rousey, she needed the victory, you know.
Charlotte Flair has only been with the company for 5 years.
I thought
she's been with the company longer than that.
Let's check.
She's been longer than 5 years. Only 5 years? Sure.
2015. Let's see. Let's do the math.
2015.
Oh, no, that's
7 years.
That is more than 5 years. That's what? Yeah. 7 years. So yeah, seven years.
Yeah.
Same. You know, she's been. You know, kind of. You know what I mean? Like she's been less than a decade. She's been in this company and she won the title 13 times, man. Like, I think it's a little. You know.
So she. So it comes to an average of about almost 2 times a year.
Basically.
It's not that bad when you think about it.
Yeah, and she won, I think, the NXT title, like, twice, and I don't think they consider that in the thing.
Yeah.
You know?
But she comes from royalty, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to be like her dad.
Yep. So. Absolutely. So, yeah, I think Ronda Rousey needed that victory, you know. Obviously, she hasn't won, she hasn't held the title since, you know, Becky Lynch beat both Charlotte and Charlotte and Ronda. I mean, yeah, well, yeah, you know, that WrestleMania a few years back. So I think that was a missed opportunity there. Let me see what else happened. Oh, yes, to me, the biggest surprise of the night, and to me, the best match of the night, you know, of the pay-per-view event was Stone Cold, you know, officially coming out of retirement for that one match. First match in 19 years, you know, since he lost to The Rock at WrestleMania 19 in 03. And he battled against Kevin Owens, you know, the guy he passed the torch to, you know, allowing him to do the stunner, you know, the Stone Cold Stunner. So it was a great match. You know, the buildup was Kevin Owens was talking trash about, you know, Stone Cold's home state of Texas. And, you know, basically Stone Cold defended his, you know, his fellow Texans and came out of retirement one night only and, you know, whooped Kevin Owens behind in a no-holds-bar match to close off night one. And then night two, of course, you had your favorite match of the night, you know, Team RK-Bro.
I love that match.
Retaining
High Flying Acrobat match of the night. Yeah, that match was great.
Yeah, they retained the title against the Street Profits, you know, obviously Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins, and then Alpha, you know, they also defeated Alpha Academy, which also has Otis and Chad Gable. And yeah, it was a you know, a good match, and you know, we'll see how long they hold on to the titles until I think Randy Orton will eventually turn on him. You told me previously you think it's going to be Riddle that's going to turn on him.
Could be, yeah. I could see Riddle turning heel, maybe. Never know.
Yeah, I'd be surprised to see that happening, but hey, you know, it's happened. I mean,
yeah.
If MVP can turn on Bobby Lashley on Monday Night Raw, which... You know, I suspected that would happen once Bobby Lashley defeated Omos at WrestleMania, and then Raw, you know, he finally returned back with MVP, you know, and then, you know, he turned his back on MVP because obviously he trusted him for all those years because, you know, they had that relationship dating back to their TNA days. Well, their WWE, the first run of theirs in WWE, and then his championship run in TNA, of course, they reignited that relationship during Bobby Lashley's almighty championship run.
Mm-hmm.
So now MVP is the manager of Omos. And, yeah. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was kind of, I was in that shock seeing MVP turn on Lashley. I actually was thinking that was going to happen, you know, after Lashley beat Omos at WrestleMania. So I thought that Omos would be the perfect guy for MVP to represent and to manage. So that wasn't much of a surprise to me.
Likewise.
The Cody Rhodes promo on Raw the following night, I thought that was great. I would have loved to see Cody Rhodes. I would have loved to see him bring back the undashing gimmick. I thought that was the best gimmick of his career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the that protective mask that he was that he wore, and would put paper bags on people on opponents once he defeated them. We actually went to a live show, I think, where I think he fought maybe Big Show or I forgot who he fought. But I don't think he ended up putting a paper bag over anyone's head that night. But
did he do it to the fans when he was coming and doing his entrance?
Oh yeah, I think he would give. Wouldn't he give paper bags to some fans or something? Or
I think so when he came out.
Maybe it's possible. I forget, but I, you know, that was the only time that I saw his gimmick up close and personal. Mm-hmm. But I still think that he should bring that back at one point. But as long as WWE doesn't ruin him, and you know, gives him a major push, you know, to compete for the champ, maybe the heavyweight or the universal title, you know, I think it'll be great for him. You know, because they ruined him when they gave him that Stardust character. I mean, that pretty much killed any momentum that he had in WWE at that time. So hopefully they don't do it again.
Well, apparently that was the deal breaker that, you know, that's what made the deal. Like, basically, he there would be no acknowledgement of Stardust, you know, basically, you know, when he spoke to Vince that there would be no acknowledgement. And then, I don't know if you noticed, during the match with Seth Rollins, he accidentally did the cartwheel.
I
guess that was an accidental homage to his old character, I guess.
Yeah, I'm probably making fun of it, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was thinking too when he did it. and then speaking of comical moments, you had Johnny Knoxville defeat Sami Zayn in an Anything Goes match, which is basically a hardcore match, but they just wanted to give it a different name to make it sound like it's a revolutionary match, I guess.
Yeah,
but it was a fun match. You know, it was a good match to watch. I guess the only thing I didn't like about the match was, you know, Chris Pontus wearing his usual outfit from the show and movies, which, you know, was not a fan of that. But at the end of that, it was a good match. And then Wee Man body slam Sami Zayn.
Yeah.
You
know, it was an entertaining match. I mean, it was kind of short, but still fun to watch.
Yeah. And, you know, Kevin McAllister from the Home Alone films would have been proud.
Those
traps.
Props. Yeah.
You know? And then you had, afterwards, you had Sasha Banks and Naomi defeating Carmella and Queen Zelina. You know, who lost the titles. And then of course, Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley lost, and Talia and Shayna Baszler also lost that match. So Sasha Banks and Naomi, they won the WWE Women's Tag Team titles, which for the first time ever, you know, you had two black women win the titles. So, you know, long overdue. Congrats to them. And then after that, you had Edge versus AJ Styles, and Edge came out with the victory. I thought Styles would have won that match.
But yeah, I was rooting for Styles. I thought he was going to win also, but
you want me to tell you the moment I knew when he was going to lose? When the moment I knew he was going to lose is when Damian Priest popped up and was just staring at him, you know, like. Which obviously was the distraction.
Oh, distraction, yeah.
But I was like, before he even did anything, I was like, he's definitely gonna align with Edge because they both have, and it makes perfect sense, you know. They both have that rocker, metalhead gimmick, you know, which I think is, you know, true to who they are, you know, behind the scenes, you know. But yeah, it made perfect sense, you know, forming a tag team with those two guys. So I thought it was, you know, one of the rare times WWE came out with a out of the box idea.
Yeah.
You know.
Definitely.
And then this this next match was totally, you know, typical WWE logic. Sheamus, Rich Holland defeats New Day, and Rich Holland, like a month ago, he injured New Day's Big E in a match where he made him land on his head by accident, you know, twice, which basically nearly killed him and nearly paralyzed him, you know. And you know what I mean? Like, and then they made Rich Holland and Sheamus win the match. Like, you know, you would have thought WWE would have, you know, would have punished him, and Rich Holland would have had some heat on him for nearly, you know, paralyzing and nearly killing one of their top stars, and a guy who had the title on him like a few months ago in Big E.
Yep.
And, you know, Rich Holland doesn't seem like he has any heat on him. You know, he won the match, and then Sheamus, Rich Holland, and Butch, formerly known as Pete Dunne in NXT, you know, they start beating up on Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. Like, that match was pretty much pointless. You know, it didn't make any sense. And then another shocking match of the night was, you know, after Pat McAfee defeated Austin Theory, Mr. McMahon, you know, fights against Pat McAfee, which was the rumor for like over a month, and until, you know, he announced, you know, Vince announced that, you know, Austin Theory would be fighting instead of, you know, the rumored match of, you know, him fighting against Pat McAfee. But, you know, Mr. McMahon, two nights in a row, another shocking, you know, match from a guy from the Attitude Era. Stone Cold's former rival, Vince McMahon, comes out of retirement and wrestling his first match in Lord knows how many years this guy has fought. Didn't he fight against Kevin Owens a few years back?
Did he?
I think in a regular match, or Kevin Owens just you know, did that the frog splash on him.
Could be, I can't remember, but yeah, seeing this man come out, I mean, he's still in good shape, you know. But yeah, there were some botch moments in that in that surprise comeback that he had,
and especially the you know, when Stone Cold came out, then Stone Cold stunnered McMahon. But this was the worst. McMahon has always been the worst opponent that Stone Cold stunners, you know, like reaction wise, you know.
He didn't even sell the stunner, man. It was like,
it was horrible.
Stone Cold stunned him, and then he stood there, and then he didn't even like fall down. Well,
bounced back off the turnbuckle, and then Stone Cold grabbed him and then hit the stunner.
Well, Stone Cold was trying to grab him initially to do the stunner, but he couldn't get a hold of his neck.
Yeah. He bounced off the rope.
Yeah.
Oh my god, yo man! Like, it took him like 10 seconds to do a stunner. Like, my goodness. And then Stone Cold stunnered Pat McAfee, and I think Stone Cold stunnered Byron Saxton the night before that, if I'm not mistaken.
After the show, I heard he stunned a fan, so he was stunning everybody this WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, man, it was funny. And something I noticed with the Stone Cold with Vince McMahon botching the stunner. Stone Cold, when he does the stunner, you know, I noticed that the people spit out the beer, but I never know Stone Cold spits it out too on the impact.
Really?
Did you know that? You didn't know that either, right?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I like
spits
when
it out.
Stone Cold spits it out too at the same time when he hits the stunner. The person who hits it on spits it out, but he also spits out the beer too.
What the hell?
I didn't know that.
He spits out the beer the same time that the stunner on the person.
Yeah, if you watch,
that's kind of gross, man, when I think about it.
It is gross. I don't know which of them goes bad, or Triple H, you know, spitting, you know, the water in the fan, you know, the fans in the front row. I mean,
it's gross.
Yeah, if you watch the replay of the stunners that he gave on you know, this weekend, you'll see, especially the Vince McMahon one was so obvious. That's how I noticed about it, because, you know, usually he's in sync with when he hits the stunner. I always thought it was the person who he was drinking beer with is always the one that spits it out. But oh, and speaking of Triple H, Triple H, you know, he made it official before night two. He let off the night two by leaving his boots and his wrestling boots in the ring, you know, to signify, you know, the end of an era. You know, he's officially retiring, in the ring, you know, after he had the heart problems recently. So, you know, I was going to say best of luck to him, but I mean, he'll be fine. You know, he's running behind the scenes in WWE.
We'll see how long it lasts, because I don't think that's the last of him wrestling, you know. We always hear these wrestlers saying that, you know, they have a career-ending injuries and they're not going to come back. We've heard from Edge, Daniel Bryan, now we're hearing for Triple H, and then they come back after all these.
But he has a defibrillator, so that's a.
Well, you know.
If it wasn't for the defibrillator, man, this dude would have came back when he was, like, in his 70s, like Vince McMahon would have done it, you know?
Well, the defibrillator, I mean, it's just keeping your heart to pump. I mean, really, you could still be active with it,
you know? But I'm saying, like, his heart racing like that, like, in a match, you know, that's not going to be healthy for him.
Yeah, but, I mean, you've seen other people come back from that. I mean, didn't that net basketball player, he had a heart issue and he came back? He retired and then unretired and come back to play for the Nets?
Oh, Aldridge.
Yeah, so, I mean, you've had people come back, you know, from that. It's, you know, even that bum-ass Eddie Curry, the Knicks, with his heart issue.
Oh, so, man. But, yeah, man, I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, you can never count Triple H out, you know.
Yeah, I'm not going to count it out. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a future match with him, even if it's, you know, with him in little activity from him. But, you know, I won't count it out.
That's a fair point. Yeah, let me see what else. What other matches did they have? Yes. And, oh, yeah, last but not least, you had Roman Reigns defeating Brock Lesnar, finally, at WrestleMania, in the winner-takes-all WWE and WWE Universal title unification match. And, I was surprised. You know, I was thinking Brock Lesnar was going to win, you know, because, you know, Brock Lesnar is, you know, the baby face now. Just like kind of like the last time, Roman Reigns was the baby face against Brock Lesnar, and he lost to Brock. So now Roman Reigns got that, he finally got his revenge. So now the question is, who's going to finally win the title off of him? You would think common sense would be The Rock, you know. You know, if he come back next year's WrestleMania and face Roman Reigns and end the title reign, but I don't think The Rock behind the scenes would want to end his cousin's career. You know what I mean? I think he'd have the match, but you know, he would officially put him over. You know, kind of like what he did with Brock in 2002, because apparently that SummerSlam match, supposedly Rock was supposed to defend the title, the WWE title, but he changed the result and allowed Brock Lesnar to win, which catapulted Brock into a whole nother stratosphere. I mean, obviously before that time, Brock, you know, he had some big wins, you know, against Hogan, making Hogan tap out. And, you know, he had that dominant run. But, you know, being The Rock at SummerSlam for the title, man, that just solidified, you know, his dominance, which he still has to this day. So, yeah, I don't see The Rock being the one to end his streak. What about you?
Well, you know, that Roman Reigns Rock Lesnar match, I thought that Lesnar would have beaten him for those two titles, but I guess it's WWE wants to keep the titles on him for a much longer period, having a potential matchup with Rock. So you're saying you don't think it's going to happen, or you think it's going to happen?
I think the match was going to happen, but I Rock won't beat him.
I don't see Rock beating him either if it does happen. But
I hope I'm wrong, because, you know, obviously, you know,
I mean, the idea would be for Rock to put him over.
Yeah, and that's what Rock, like I was saying, that's what Rock has been known to do. He did it with Cena in 29, which, I mean, he didn't, you know, Cena was already a multiple-time champion, you know.
Right.
Had already multiple WWE title wins at WrestleMania in defenses. Shockingly enough, Rock has never defended or won a title at WrestleMania, you know, a heavyweight title, you know. So it would have been nice for him to finally get that. I mean, it would have been long overdue for him to finally win one or retain a title. But, you know, it's not important to The Rock, so it's not going to, you know, it's not going to happen, you know. But, yeah, all in all, this was a great WrestleMania, you know. What would you rate it? 0 to 10.
Yeah, I'd say about 8 and 8, between an 8 and 8.5, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd say I would agree with that as well. I'd say definitely 8.5. I mean, with the Happy Corbin match, you know, that eliminates any chances of it being a 9. You know, the other matches were pretty good for the most part. You know, I was pleasantly surprised. Leading up to the event, I wasn't really all. There was only a handful of matches I was like really excited about. You know, Belair versus Lynch match. Obviously, Roman Reigns and Brock. Yeah, I mean, to name a few. But yeah, all in all, it was a good pay per view event. You know, so, you know, definitely looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with WWE in the future. Oh, well, now that I think about it, you know, this WrestleMania week, they had some big debuts. You know, Gunther, formerly known as Walter, debuted on SmackDown. Raquel Gonzalez. She's now known as Raquel Rodriguez on SmackDown, the former NXT Women's Champion. I'm trying to think what other surprise appearances. I'm trying to remember. That's all I could think off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
But I think there was other more surprise, you know, debuts that happened, but I just can't put my finger on it. But we'll see in the coming weeks, you know, what's going to happen with that, you know, with WWE. But shifting gears, we're going to, you know, talk to Oscars. And, what didn't happen at the Oscars? I mean, you know, obviously they were looking for, you know, historic, memorable moments at the Oscars. You know, obviously they had three women hosting it, you know, with Amy Schumer, Wanda Sykes, and Regina Hall hosting the event. You had Will Packer, the first black man to direct the Oscars, Questlove won a title. I mean, won an award. But you know, to name, you know, to name a few of the accomplished. Oh yeah, I think her name is Anna DeVos. She won the award. You know, the same role that basically Rita Moreno won it 60 years ago for the same role.
Yep.
And then, but all of those stuff was overshadowed by, you know, the slap road around the world. And of course, you know what I'm talking about. And, yeah, the moment when Will Smith lost his cool and, you know, slapped Chris Rock, you know. Basically, as you all know, Chris Rock, you know, did a G.I. Joe joke. And initially, Will Smith, you know, was joking, you know, he took, you know, took the joke in stride. But then, assuming, you know, he saw his wife's reaction, you know, he, you know, he lost his cool and smacked Chris Rock in front of in front of the entire world, man.
Yeah, he smacked the shit out of Chris Rock. You know, it looked like something out of Three Stooges episode, pretty much. And, you know, I mean, the joke wasn't even that malicious. I mean, it was a harmless joke. He just called her G.I. Jane. Said that she's auditioning for G.I. Jane Part 2. And, you know, when I think of G.I. Jane, I think of courageous, brave, heroic. I mean, being compared to G.I. Jane isn't a bad thing. If someone called me, compared me to G.I. Joe, I'd be like, thank you, you know? It's,
You're a real American hero.
Yeah, real American hero. So I don't know why she took much offense to it, but, I mean, I don't think Chris Rock knew about her having her suffering from alopecia.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought Will Smith storming on stage like that and slapping Chris Rock in the face was uncalled for. I mean, there's a better way to handle that, and he could have handled that after the show. Just confronted Chris Rock, told him, hey, you know, I don't think what you did was right. You shouldn't have made fun of my wife like that. You know, she's mm-hmm. going through a hard time with, you know, her hair loss. You know, you should apologize. You know, he could have handled it that much better than he did. So going on stage, slapping Chris Rock, and then yelling expletives from his seat. So, and now he's going to be banned for it. So
for 10 years. But yeah, I mean, I think if you know he, you know, what I mean, like you said, all he had to do was just basically. You know, basically would have just he could have just said, hey, man, whether it was live or behind the scenes, you know, he could have just said, hey, man, you know, I didn't appreciate, you know, joking about my wife having, you know, alopecia or whatever, you know, like, and just say it like that, you know, just say it. If he would have said it like that, I would assume Chris Rock would be, you know, understanding and, you know, would have, you know, it would have had the same effect. It still would have been shocking to see. You know, Will Smith get upset because you never see him get upset. But at least it would have been, you know, the right way to go about it instead of, you know, him losing his cool like that, slapping him and, you know, basically, you know, and then, you know, cursing the Oscars. Like, it was just, you know, uncalled for. And another thing is, you know, Chris Rock has history with both of them. Obviously, you know, then he has told jokes on Jada in the past Oscars, especially during the Oscar So White controversy from a few years ago. But he's actually worked with both of them. Like he was on, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, you know, back in the days, and then he also starred with Jada in the Madagascar franchise. So I mean, he knows them pretty well. So I mean, I don't know what happened that, you know, caused, you know, whatever this friction between, you know, rocking the, you know, in the couple, you know. But, yeah, let's just, hopefully they can, you know, resolve this situation and find, you know, forgive each other and just move on. But, yeah, it's just a crazy situation that was, you know, displayed for the whole world to see. So, but, yeah, the real MVP out of the whole situation was Denzel because, he spoke to both men after the incident and, you know, try to defuse the situation so that it wouldn't, get out of hand. And the most memorable thing that, Will Smith said in his, his acceptance speech for winning the first, his first ever Oscar, for his role as, King Richard Williams, Serena and Venus's parent, father, was that he said that Denzel told him that, when you're in your greatest moment, that's when the devil comes for you. And, Will Smith found out the hard way about that. So hopefully this will be a teachable moment for him and other people, to use their words and, and not, react like that.
I mean, it was really a surprising, one of the most surprising and saddest moments that we've seen on live television.
Mm-hmm.
You can't imagine how Chris Rock felt at that moment. He felt embarrassed. And just imagine, like, his kids watching your father get slapped like that on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So Will Smith should be ashamed of himself. I mean, he handled that inappropriately, and there's him being banned from attending the Oscars for 10 years is well deserved.
Yeah, I mean, I like both actors, but yeah, he definitely has to take the punishment. He gotta take the L for that. I mean, he should have just, respectfully, expresses disappointment in the joke, but in a professional manner, But no, it is what it is. Shifting gears. Yeah, the Knicks, man. The Knicks. I don't know if you heard RJ Barrett. He's hurt. He's gonna be out, for the rest of the year. I think that the next game is later tomorrow. RJ Barrett, he injured his knee on Friday night after scoring 14 points. But the big story of the night was Obi Toppin scoring 35 points. On Friday night against Washington, and yeah, quickly he had, like, I think 21 points or so, 22 points probably, and 10 assists, I think, if my memory serves me right. So yeah, they're having that connection, that quickly top end connection that they have there. And then Sims, he was grabbing some rebounds. I think he grabbed 10 rebounds that game too. But yeah, the Knicks, they blew out the Wizards after they blew that horrible, that horrible loss to the Nets, where they had a huge lead and then they blew the game in typical Knicks versus Nets fashion, for the past couple of years. And the Nets came back and won that game. But the highlights was, definitely RJ Barrett emerging as a leader. Obi Toppin, with the absence of Randall, he's emerged into a potential star on the team. And then quickly developing into a point guard, because he's starting to make, you know, his passing ability, you know, and a priority, because he, you know, he said he's studying how the greats do it, the great point guards do it. So you can see he's definitely improving in the point guard side aspect, because they definitely going to need that, because that's going to be some of the moves they're going to need to do in the offseason. Then, you know, of course, they're going to wonder if they're going to re-sign Mitchell Robinson. But, you know, the biggest thing they got to do, in my opinion, is that they got to trade Julius Randle, man. And they, by some miracle, if they could somehow get Donovan Mitchell, if the Jazz, you know, have a, you know, a first round exit or whatnot, they need a guy of that caliber to resurrect them. You know, I think it's gonna happen? No, but you know, that's what they need. They need to get rid of Randle, because they cannot have this guy. They thought this guy was going to be an anchor to hold this team down, but now he's like an anchor, dragging the team down into the bottom of the Pacific Ocean, you know. So definitely need to get rid of Randle and his contract. I mean, the rumors is that, you know, he unfollowed everybody on the Knicks. He deleted social media messages, you know, tweets and stuff like that with him as a Knick. So, I mean, yeah, man. As great as he was, you know, this past year, you know, that's how, you know, horrible he's been in the, you know, on the team this year. So, you know, I think a change of scenery will do him good, you know, and then he could be a second or third option on another team. And, you know, hey, who knows? And he could finally win a title with somebody else. You know, so he won't be under the pressure of, you know, being the top guy, you know, on the team, which, you know, was evident during the playoffs. So what's your thoughts on the state of the Knicks right now?
Well, I like how the Knicks played down the stretch here with one game remaining. Tibbs, he gave some of the young guys some playing time. Quickly, Toppin, Grimes, you know, they played well these last couple of weeks. So, you know, we have a bright future, you know, with a lot of these young guys. But too little, too late. You know, the way we're playing, we should have been playing like this all season long. So, you know, we didn't have Rose all year, which could have helped us. Mitchell Robinson, you know, he had some up and down games. I thought he could have been better. Been better than, you know, than he should have been better, especially what we expected from Mitchell Robinson. He could really be much better this year. But, you know, there's some bright spots on this team for next year. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But as far as Randle's concerned, I mean, he's been a conundrum all year. You know, I don't know what's going on in his head. He's been inconsistent. He's been crying a lot. Been bitching to referees about stuff. I mean, this guy has been an issue all year, and it might just come down to trading him in the offseason. And as long as we get something good in return, I'm for it. So that's all I got to say. But hopefully, you know, we have a much better year next year, and hopefully it's not as bad as it was this year. Because can't go from making the playoffs one year and then not making the playoffs the next year. I mean, can't have that.
You hit it right on the head. This next team, they definitely need a reality check, man. They cannot have Julius Randle as the top option on this team. Let alone this, you know, he needs the change of scenery. Like, it's official, you know. You know, there's no way around it. You got to find a way to get rid of that contract. You know, if you could get a Donovan Mitchell or, you know, somebody of that caliber, I mean, I strongly doubt it, but. Or, you know, him or, you know, Damian Lillard, somebody of that ilk, you know. As long as you don't give up, Barrett, you know, and potentially Toppin, I mean, I'd love to keep quickly, but, you know, obviously if you're going to give, to get something, you got to give something up. So, yeah, getting rid of Randle should be their top priority. And that's basically all I got to say about that, really. But, yeah, switching gears, MLB, man. Finally, we have opening day. You know, obviously Yankees, you know, they've been winning, you know, winning some games, you know, in the Bronx. But to me, the bigger story is the New York Mets. You know, the Mets, they're on the road against their rival Washington Nationals. They won the first game 5-1. Yeah, Tyler McGill, man, this guy, you know, he pitched well last year, but yeah, he's the most unlikeliest starting, you know, opening day starter in the history of the Mets, and he, you know, he pitched pretty good. I think he went I think he went 6 innings or so, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, he pitched well. Cano, your boy Cano, he hit, you know, he got some hits that first game. Yeah, and, you know, basically, you know, the Mets, you know, they
funny dominated. Funny how you never call him your boy since he's on your team now. That's
well,
funny.
The way he's playing, you know, he's been hitting swinging the bat well, you know, the bat well. So, I mean.
How long has he been on your guys' team? For 3 years now, right?
Three. He played two because
didn't he have another banned substance suspension also?
Yeah,
last
year, you know.
So,
but yeah, he played well, you know. Jeff McNeil's back to his old form, you know, and you know, they won that first game. So, believe it or not, man, the Mets have the best winning percentage in opening day than any team in the history of baseball.
Wow.
Did you know that? Basically,
The Mets,
whatchamacallit, do you know what was the first year the Mets actually won their first opening day?
The first year they played?
Nope. I'll give you two more guesses.
Following year they played?
Nope. I'll give you one more guess. From 62 on now. Nope, but you're close. The first time they won opening day was 1970.
Okay.
So literally the Mets lost their first eight opening days in a row before they won the World Series. So as soon as they won the World Series, the very next game, the regular season game they played after winning the World Series, they won opening day finally. Mm-hmm. And then ever since from 70 on, they've only lost like, what, five opening days this whole time. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, interesting stat.
Mm-hmm. So the Mets won a World Series before they won an opening day game. I mean, the Mets have some weird history. But after that, you know, the Scherzer made his debut on Friday night, dominated his former club. You know, basically, he dominated them. Jeff McNeil hit a homer on his birthday on Friday night. Trying to think what else happened. I think the Mets won, 6-3 that game. And then this Saturday night's game, the Mets won, I think the final score was, 5-0 probably. And it was highlighted by, I think it was the first inning or third inning? I can't remember what inning that was. But, Pete Alonso, he had his first career grand slam to put the Mets on the board 4-0. And Chris Bassett, you know, one of their big acquisitions that they did this year, the big trade that they did in the off season. He won his first game Saturday night. So far the Mets are 3-0 to start the season. First time in 10 years they started the season 3-0.
That's great.
So yeah, so far the Mets are doing well. They're doing great. They're firing on all cylinders, and hopefully they'll get the sweep on the Nationals tomorrow afternoon, and then they're gonna go on the road again, and then I think it's on the 11th is when they're gonna host the D-backs.
The D-bags.
Yeah, another team you have history with as well. 21 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, before the Mets host the D-backs, they're gonna go on the road against Philly. Hopefully, it can continue. You know, their runs. Their hitting can continue, and the strong pitching they've had so far can continue. In Philly, but before that happens, they gotta hope that Carrasco can have a vintage Cleveland Indian performance, tomorrow afternoon to put the broom on the Nationals. And then they're going to go on the road with the Phillies, and then they'll host the Diamondbacks, where they're finally going to unveil the Tom Seaver statue that's long overdue with this franchise. So far so good. You know, they must gotta keep it up in their 60th year, of existence, the 60th anniversary of their existence. Hopefully in October they can cap it off the way that, they should have, something that's eluded them since 86. So hopefully we'll see what happens. But switching gears, you got the Yankees. Obviously before the season started, game one started, the Yankee fans were shocked that Aaron Judge rejected the 7-year, $213 million contract. I mean, even I was shocked about that, and I'm not a Yankee fan. But, most importantly, the Yankees do what they did best, and win. They've been winning their games so far. Donaldson, their big acquisition in the offseason, he got the walk-off hit to send the Yankee fans happy.
Game one, yep.
Mm-hmm, in game one. And then Saturday they won again. So, yeah, what's your thoughts on both teams' performances so far this year?
Yeah, the Mets, they're playing well right now. 3-0, off to a good start. Yankees, 2-0 right now. They're also off to a good start. Got some big home runs from Stanton and Rizzo these last couple of days. I think they become like the first Yankee teammates to each homer in the first couple of games. So, that's really nice. Donaldson had that game-winning RBI single on Friday, so that's big for him. I think this Yankee team is gonna be good. I think they're gonna be good. They're gonna be much better in clutch situations, it looks like, as opposed to last year when it seemed like when they were in big spots where they needed a big hit, they couldn't get it. So this year, I think there's gonna be a lot of big hits from these guys. And I think the pitching is going to be much better. You have Severino back. Although Cole struggled in that first game against the Red Sox, I think he'll have a typical Cy Young candidate year. And, I think this Yankee team will be very good. It'll be very good. So time will tell. Well, how they fare. But so far, so good.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, we'll definitely see. Hopefully, both teams will be playing well in October.
Yeah, don't jinx anything yet and think about World Series. Don't say World Subway Series yet, please.
I didn't say, right? I thought of it, but I didn't say it. I stopped myself from saying it.
It's still, the season just started.
I didn't say it. I thought it, but I didn't say it.
All right.
Trust me, as a Mets fan, you know, I know, you know, it's way too early. Way too early. Like, the last time they won 3-0 was what 2002? No, not 2002. 2012. And as you know, Mets didn't have any banners that year. So, you know, the season's still young.
Young. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But you know, of course, you know, you gotta believe. So we'll see what happens when the dust clears. But yeah, well, we're gonna take a brief break, and I'm gonna give you my thought. We're gonna give our thoughts on the new Batman film, and you know, then we'll call it a night. So we'll be right back after these messages. You've been listening to Sports with a Legend on Blog Talk Radio. Hey, what up, everybody? Welcome back to Sports of the Legend. I'm, of course, Wayne Mamo, and Macaulay Matthew is on the other line as well. And, yeah, let's give you our thoughts on the Batman film. So, of course, you know, if you guys have been watching this show or listening to this show since 2009, you guys would know I'm a huge Batman fan. And, you know, one of my earliest childhood moments would be, you know, was watching the Batman movie, the original Batman, you know, films with Michael Keaton. You know, in what was it, 89 and 92 when they came out. So I guess I was start sometime in the 90s, you know, on VHS, and you know, obviously to me, that's the top version of the Batman on the big screen. You know, it's only marveled with the animated series, which you just heard the theme song to that one, like about a minute or so ago. But yeah, I mean, to me, this movie, the newest movie that came out, you know, I had low expectations for it, you know, because, you know, ever since I saw The Last Jedi with Star Wars, that just, you know, just it traumatized me, you know, watching these modern day films nowadays, man. It's just, you know, they're so anti fan service that they just give you a product that the fans do not want to see. So, you know, I just try to be cautiously optimistic going forward watching films nowadays. And, you know, I knew it would never surpass the you know, the old school Michael Keaton films, but, you know, I try to give it a benefit of the doubt, and, you know, sure enough, this movie exceeded my expectations. You know, it was, I say it was on par with the Christian Bale films. I think I still like the Christian Bale films more, but it's in the neighborhood. And why do I say that, you might ask? Is because, you know, it's a unique, you know, the Batman lore, you know, of his earlier years of crime fighting. And what really set it apart, other than it being, you know, a modernized version of Batman, is that, you know, his gadgets, you know, are like more, you know, more real, you know, like it's more set in the real world, you know, whereas Batman, to me, Batman, you know, he's like, you know, an American James Bond, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he has the gadgets. You know, they both have, you know, an impressive rogues gallery of villains. You know, they also have legendary love interests, you know, throughout the decades of, you know, the films. So, you know, Batman and, you know, and those franchises are very, to me, they're very similar. But this film grounds Batman, you know, and it makes it more believable that he's a, you know, a regular human being, you know, even though obviously, you know, he has no powers, but, you know, because of his over the top gadgetry and, you know, his martial arts ability and of course his detective intellect, you know, he's able to solve crimes. But since they grounded his ability, you know, his weaponry, it really accentuated his detective skills, you know, because, you know, it kind of makes him kind of like MacGyver. Like he took basic stuff and turned it into, you know, into weapons that he could use to fight crime. You know what I mean? That makes sense. And, yeah, I thought it was a good film, you know. I mean, what was your take?
It was a very good film. It exceeded all my expectations of this film. You know, it kind of reminded me of the animated series. It had that dark feel to it. It brought back that detective, crime-solving Batman from the comic books and the animated series that we're used to seeing. You know, you didn't see that in some of the these previous Batman movies. And I thought Robin Pattinson did a great job as the actual Batman, although his Bruce Wayne was kind of mysterious and gothic a bit.
Yes.
So I don't think he played a good Bruce Wayne, but Batman,
Agreed.
I think he played that character perfectly.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you.
Like,
Michael Keaton, you know, he's the perfect Batman. You know, well, you know, you have that dichotomy of Bruce Wayne being the playboy, you know, like a dude who doesn't like, you know, who just cares about living, you know, the lifestyle, the glamorous lifestyle, whereas Batman is, you know what I mean, like, but Batman is his, when you think about it, because normally you would think Bruce Wayne is his real identity, but in all actuality, Bruce Wayne is the mask that Batman wears when he's not, you know, fighting crime, because, you know, his whole mission is about, you know, avenging his parents' death, you know, being killed, you know, when he was a little boy, outside the movie theater. So basically, his whole life purpose was to, you know, fight crime and to prevent other kids, you know, from, you know, suffering the same fate that he did, you know. And that's what, you know, makes his character, you know, larger than life. But, like, I would agree with you. Robert Pattinson, he was a surprisingly a very good Batman. Bruce Wayne, yeah, he, I don't know, he would fit more of a Terry McGinnis Bruce Wayne than I would say Bruce Wayne. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, like I said, Michael Keaton, he knocked out both out of the park. Ben Affleck, he was a great, you know, Bruce Wayne. I mean, he just was playing himself, essentially, when you think about it. And if you don't believe me, ask J-Lo. But, but yeah, for real, you know, he was a great Bruce Wayne. Of course, Adam West, you know, the OG from the 60s Batman, you know, he incorporated both versions of Batman, Bruce Wayne and Batman, except, you know, obviously, just, you know, that show is kind of, you know, a sign of the times, you know, where Batman was viewed as a, you know, wasn't really viewed as the typical Dark Knight serious Batman, whereas Batman was more of a, you know, he had like a upbeat personality, more synonymous with Superman, you know. But yeah, and then Christian Bale, you know, he's another guy who incorporated both Batman and Bruce Wayne, you know. I'd say on an equal level, except for the voice, you know, that he did, you know, you know, like, like Two-Face or whatever. That would be the only knock you could say about his character.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, all in all, I would say this movie was a 9. You know, I was thinking this movie might be a 7, maybe even lower than that. But, you know, it was great acting. You know, him, you know, Zoe Kravitz, I would say she stole the movie. And Andy Serkis was good, you know, as Alfred. But yeah. Oh yeah, Jeffrey Wright, you know, he was phenomenal as Commissioner Gordon.
Oh yeah.
He was very phenomenal as Commissioner Gordon in that film. And another person, Penguin. Penguin was great too. I think it was Colin Farrell who played him. And he looked unrecognizable as Penguin. And then, oh yeah, I forgot John Turturro. He was great as Falcone. So yeah, it was a great film.
Yeah, I would definitely give it a 9.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a very good. You know, Rob Pattinson did a good job. Zoe Kravitz did a very good job. Yeah, I mean, the film again, it exceeded my expectations, and I would put it in the. I would put it in top 5 even of Batman films of all time,
mm-hmm.
believe it or not.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the Michael Keaton films is, you know, still the top. I think only tied with the animated series. Then I would rank the Dark Knight films with Christian Bale. Then I would say I rank this. And then I would put Adam West as a Batman. And then I would put Ben Affleck, and then Val Kilmer, and then George Clooney, if I was ranking it right now.
Okay.
But yeah, definitely check out the movie. You won't be disappointed.
Yeah, it's a great film.
Mm-hmm. And we didn't even give spoilers, which is, I think, the first time we haven't done that. I think we weren't given reviews. So, hey, check it out. I won't spoil it for you guys this time. And, yeah, check it out. Before we head out, yeah, there's some sad news in the sporting world. Dwayne Haskins, you know, the former Washington Redskins quarterback, and you know, he signed with the Steelers. Unfortunately, he passed away. He was killed yesterday. And he was, I think, what was, how old was he? He was only 24. I think he died on a hit and run. He was struck by a dump truck on a South Florida highway.
He's crossing. He was trying to cross on foot a highway, and he got hit by a dump truck.
Yeah, my condolences go out to his family and the
same
people
here.
Who are directly affected by his passing. It's messed up. A young career, young man like that. You know, his life cut short. You know, a local guy from Jersey, grew up a Giant fan like you, Mac, and it's sad that his career is already over.
Yeah, 24 years old, Ohio standout, first round pick by Washington, was gonna play for the Steelers this upcoming season. Career cut short, and by this tragedy, my condolences go out to his family, friends, teammates, anyone who knew him. Yeah, so it's very unfortunate and sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very, very sad day indeed. Yeah, man. I hate to end the show on a somber note, but is there anything you'd like to say, Mac, before we head out of here?
Everyone enjoy the rest of their weekend, and just check out my show, Hi Mac. Check your local listings for my podcast every Saturday at 10.
You're the man. Check out his show, his podcast, iMac. Check out my YouTube channel, Sports and Religion TV, and come back next week and check out the next episode of Sports and Religion every Saturdays at 10 on Blog Talk Radio. He's Macaulay Matthew. I'm Wayne Mamo, and I'll see you guys next week. Peace.